The World Tomorrow. Garner Ted Armstrong brings you the plain truth about today's world news and the prophecies of the world tomorrow.
And greetings, friends around the world. Kissinger shook the world when he said the United States would use force in the Middle East in a grave emergency. But it's even more staggering to realize that if the United States should in fact at some time use force in the Middle East, it would be using force against its own equipment. That we would no doubt enter some engagement in the Middle East against naval units supplied with American-made vessels, very likely even one with a nuclear-powered aircraft carrier eventually. That we would go to war in the air down there with F-14 Tomcats built by Grumman, which I saw in the late stages of their program out at Point Mugu, one of the areas where the test program was being conducted by Grumman. And that is a very controversial swing wing, kind of a twin-tailed aircraft. They lost one or two, I think, in testing, and you've read a good bit about it recently in the news. They're a fantastically supersonic, sophisticated, even a later generation aircraft than the very controversial F-111. And these have been about as controversial as those, but they're supposed to be even far superior to those. It was told me by one of the men in the test program that they would easily shoot down an F-111 in individual combat. And I guess in some mock flights, they'd actually tried that, and it proved that they could. So it's interesting that if we were to use force in the Middle East, we would be fighting our own equipment. We're arming some of the Middle Eastern countries now with American naval equipment, with American and British tanks, with American aircraft, supersonic and super sophisticated. The Shah of Iran is a man who is in a great hurry. He now wants to regain the lost glamour and the glory of the ancient Persian Empire, and has even referred to that. They know, in their limited reserves of oil, that the nation of Iran must develop its dreams of future empire and of glory to become about the fifth most powerful nation, or the fourth. Maybe they hope to be third. Maybe they really hope to be number one, I can't tell, in the world by about the 1990s. And recently, the Shah of Iran and King Hussein of Jordan declared that Israeli-occupied East Jerusalem must be returned to the Arabs. The Shah then went to Cairo for a five-day visit aimed at further consolidating Iranian-Arab relations, because, you know, Iran is non-Arab, but it is Muslim in religion. And certainly Iran has been backing a great deal the Arab contentions over the Middle Eastern crisis and the claims that the Israelis ought to withdraw from all the territorial acquisitions gained in the 1967, and later, of course, in the 1967 primarily, at least, war. Now they've withdrawn a little bit, and we see now, eventually, that Israel appears ready to negotiate on two strategic passes, but we're not sure about the oil fields down there, the Abu Rodeis oil fields in the Sinai, which supply about 60% of all of Israel's oil needs, nor is anyone really sure about Sharm el-Sheikh, the gateway to the Gulf of Aqaba, which Israel said they would never give up. But everywhere you see the name of the Shah of Iran in world news these days, because he is after building up a gigantic armed force that will restore the ancient glories of the ancient Persian Empire to Iran. Some of it is almost tragicomic. There's nothing really humorous about one of those nations over there being supplied with dozens of super sophisticated American jet aircraft even before the American Army can be given, or the Air Force can be given, those same aircraft when they were developed for sale to the American military organizations. Well, buying in the billions seems to get you someplace in the arms race, doesn't it? The United States talks about peace. We talk about arms limitations. The United States public has swallowed the idea that our government is deliberately trying everywhere to withdraw from a warlike posture, that we're trying to get enemies to settle their differences without resorting to war, that we are trying everywhere for arms limitations, that we're trying to tell nations to calm down, to negotiate, to go to the bargaining table with each other. Yet at the same time, when we are dazzled by the possibility of getting our own billions back that we have been paying in exorbitant blackmail-like prices for Arab oil, and to get those billions back by huge contracts for Grumman and for some of our other aircraft and our tank and gun manufacturers, why, we will gobble that up in a hurry. Why, we're going to sell them hundreds of aircraft and tanks. There's no sweat about that. And we'll do it even before the American Navy or the American Air Force can get their hands on the same equipment. Iran already has the largest hovercraft navy in the world. It's got the largest naval base in the Persian Gulf. It has the most sophisticated missile system in the third world of all the so-called third world countries, and it is building a huge air base. It'll become the biggest in all the Middle East, and that will accommodate its very large and growing air force. It'll have more fighter bombers than any member of the entirety of NATO, including Britain, France, West Germany, more than any other country of NATO except the United States. Now, recently, the Shah of Iran gave British people some very good news. He really helped out their economy. He wanted 760 of those British Chieftain battle tanks and 250 of their lighter and faster Scorpion tanks. And that, by the way, happens to be a larger number of tanks. That's over 1,000 tanks. That's 1,010 tanks. That's more than is allocated to the British Rhine Army. And the British are obliging the Shah of Iran. They are going to deliver the tanks, all right. As a matter of fact, they were so delighted that they diverted 45 of those big Chieftain tanks from British units in Germany, fairly new, you know, recently produced, so the Shah could have some to get busy training on right away. There was no real reason that Britain needed those tanks. After all, that was just what we've swallowed as the American public for the last several decades, that we needed a huge standing army, and all of our sacrifices and our tax dollars and the outpouring of military funds and so on, the maintenance of British Rhine Army and French forces and American forces inside West Germany that have caused all those political problems. Why, we were 100% behind that. Now suddenly we find out that, well, there's really no real need, apparently, to maintain an awful lot of equipment, troops, and hardware over there in Europe, because if the Shah of Iran would rather have them, we'll just divert about 45 tanks from the British Rhine Army and send them on over to the Shah of Iran. If you've got the money, money talks. And even though you might be propagandized to believe that the American State Department and the American Pentagon wants peace, and I guess, really, basically, everybody wants peace. When you get right down to it, the Russians want peace, but they want it their way. But if you think that that desire for peace would outweigh the desire to traffic in arms, then you're wrong. Now, the United States obviously would resent the Soviet supplying of arms to nations in the Middle East. I don't know whether the Soviets resent the United States supplying arms to other people in the Middle East or not. I have not read any Soviet newspapers in my whole life, I don't believe. But if you got the money, according to the Shah of Iran, he's got the money, then what we say is, well, baby, we got the time, and we've got the will, and we've got the equipment, and we'd be glad to sell it to you. As a matter of fact, we'd be glad to sell the Shah of Iran our super sophisticated latest fighter bomber and latest fighter aircraft, the F-14, before we will sell it to our own Air Force by 2 to 3 years when it was developed for that precise purpose. So, the Shah has ordered from Canada, Australia, well, he's moved ahead of all the countries of Canada, Australia, and West Germany, and Israel by ordering 80 of those Grumman F-14 Tomcats at a mere $20 million a copy. But he's insured himself by being willing to pay cash, because, you know, the Navy and the Army can't do that. See, the Shah can afford to buy Tomcats from the United States, but the United States can't. Isn't that funny? Grumman needs the money, but the U.S. Navy can't afford to pay it. And so since the Navy and the Air Force are nowhere near as good a customer as the Shah of Iran, because the Shah of Iran is sitting on a mountainous pile of dollars over there he needs to get rid of and recycle into the American economy, Grumman has promised delivery of those F-14 Tomcats quicker than it can promise the Navy and the Air Force delivery, and yet the aircraft was developed for our own defense. It wasn't developed in that incredibly lengthy, dangerous, and expensive test program to sell to the Shah of Iran, but that's where the aircraft are going. Now also, even 2 or 3 years ahead of the Army request for the AHIJ attack helicopter, which is a tremendously effective weapon of war, capable of launching rockets and so on, of night operations in just about zero visibility. Well, the U.S. Army is going to have to wait 2 to 3 years on that. It would love to get its hands on those attack helicopters, but the Shah of Iran has bought those up, and it's going to be, you know, the Army's got to wait a couple, 3 years. Iran's going to get theirs almost immediately. A few days before Christmas, it was revealed that Premier Amir Abbas Hoveida of Shiran unveiled Iran unveiled a $36 billion budget for the new year, beginning in March, that allocated a staggering $10 billion for defense. Because, you see, they're earning about $2 billion a month in the treasuries over there because of surpluses pouring in as a result of oil. And today, the Shah is really in a hurry. He'd like to become a gigantic power, and he'd like to do so very, very quickly. So he's got the military muscle already now. As a matter of fact, there are 1,000 American contract employees working in Iran right now, most of whom are Vietnam veterans that are helping the Iranians learn how to operate that fleet of more than 640 helicopters. In the past fiscal year, Iran ordered more than $3.5 billion worth of planes, helicopters, and hardware from the United States. And so the United States is just about by far and away the largest producer and provider of equipment for Iran. They've got a 40,000-man air force that's equipped entirely with U.S.-built planes, including the biggest fleet of C-130 cargo carriers in the whole Middle East. And beside these British tanks they're getting, they've got a highly mobile 160,000-member ground force that's been fitted with 860 M-60s and M-47 U.S. tanks. So they've got over 1,000 British tanks on order, 45 already delivered, another 860 M60s and M47s that have had redesign, had bigger and more powerful engines than the United States used put in them, and also the latest 20-millimeter cannons put in them. They got a 12,000-man Navy that is soon going to have submarines and a helicopter carrier for cruising around in the Indian Ocean. And Iran is the very first in line after the U.S. Navy. In this case, and the only case I know of in the arms supplying, the U.S. Navy beat out Iran for the equipment we ourselves had designed for ourselves, and that's in these six new Spruance-class destroyers being built in the United States. That's been good news for our shipping industry, because the Navy could afford, or shipbuilding rather, our Navy could afford these Spruance-class destroyers. Well, as soon as we get through building about six of them for us, then a whole stream of them go to Iran. It's been, oh, I guess a couple of decades now that over 12,000 Iranian officers have taken military training in the United States. So it's kind of strange. I see Mr. Kissinger being quoted in Business Week magazine that the United States would consider using force in a grave emergency in the Middle East. And yet, if that emergency occurs, then our fellows are going to be going to war in F-14s, or maybe they won't even have F-14s yet, because we won't have ours delivered yet. We'll have to use the older and more worn-out F-4 Phantom jets against the super-sophisticated and superior F-14s in the hands of the Shah of Iran and other Middle Eastern powers. By the way, I wanted to mention that we agreed recently to sell Saudi Arabia about 800 millions worth of these modern fighters. In Riyadh, the Saudi Arabian radio said these American warplanes will, quote, strengthen Saudi Arabia's ability to defend the soil of the kingdom. Mr. Kissinger says that in a grave emergency, we would go down there into Saudi Arabia, the Persian Gulf oil sheikdoms, and maybe even Iran, and take them all on. We might have to use force. Well, listen, if we're going to do that, we better do it quick, because we're building them up to be bigger than any of our Atlantic partners, and it's all F-14s and super-sophisticated American equipment we're giving them. I've got to read to you and give credit where it lies one of the most ironic and tragicomic things I've read of recent date, Art Buchwald's column recently that is syndicated, and we're going to have Art Buchwald's column, by the way, in The Plain Truth coming out. And his column is read by millions of people around the United States. Maybe you already read this one recently in January, but he was talking about how there's a certain amount of saber-rattling going on in Washington, and how Henry Kissinger, in this Business Week interview that I've referred to, did not rule out the use of force against oil-producing nations if they strangled the West. Now, so far in this program, I've been talking to you from news communiques that we take right off the wires that we get right here in our campus of UP and AP and Reuters. And I've been telling you what the news is saying and even getting it at its source in the same way that newspapers and radio stations get it. Now, this is interesting because it came out just this morning in Art Buchwald's column. He said the major problem of carrying out these threats of use of force in the Middle East is that in order to pay for foreign oil, we've been exporting all sorts of military equipment to the very countries that we're rattling our sabers against. He said there ought to be some wild meetings going on in the Pentagon these days. An Assistant Secretary for Defense might say, as Art Buchwald characterized, quote, "I'm happy to report that we've sold $5 billion worth of F-14 jets to Iran." An Air Force general might say, "But we were promised the next batch of F-14 jets." "I'm sorry," the Assistant Secretary of Defense might reply, "but we need the money from Iran so we can go into production on the new M-65 tanks that we've sold to Saudi Arabia." An Army general says, "What are we doing selling M-65 tanks to Saudi Arabia when our own armored units have been stripped bare to supply Israel?" "Can you pay cash for the tanks?" the Assistant Secretary asks. "You know I can't," the Army general says. "Well, Saudi Arabia can. And if we're going to have a strong defense posture, we can't afford to just give away our tanks to the U.S. Army." "Mr. Secretary, is there any word about my nuclear aircraft carrier?" an admiral asks. "I have good news for you on that one," Art Buchwald said in his column. In this mythical, and maybe it isn't so mythical, discussion going on in the Pentagon, he says, "Mr. Secretary, is there any word about my nuclear aircraft carrier?" He said, "Well, I got good news for you on that one. You get the second one we're going to build." The second one? Well, who gets the first one? Kuwait. "Why is Kuwait getting a nuclear aircraft carrier before the U.S. Navy?" "Well, because we couldn't afford to build it unless we sold a carrier to them. Because, you see, they're financing us on it, and it's only fair that they get the prototype." "Well, hang it all," the admiral says. "What happens if the balloon goes up and Kuwait has a nuclear carrier and we're still waiting for ours?" "Well, we'll just borrow some submarines from Libya," the assistant secretary says. "This is ridiculous," the Air Force general says. "Everything we make, we sell to our potential enemies." "Well, that isn't my fault," the assistant secretary replies peevishly. "Military equipment costs money. And the only ones who seem to have any money are the oil-producing countries. We can't afford to finance our defense unless they share in the cost of our new arms." "Does this mean I'm going to get any new helicopters?" the commandant of the Marine Corps asks. "That decision hasn't been made yet. We did promise the Sheikh of Abu Dhabi he'd get first crack at buying our helicopters, but now he's expressed an interest in anti-aircraft missiles since we've sold the F-14s to Iran. If he doesn't want the helicopters, General, then you can have them." The general says, "Thank God he doesn't want anti-tank guns." "He doesn't," the assistant secretary says, "but Qatar does. They want to know what the blankety-blank for." And he says, "Well, they want them to knock out the tanks that we sold to Saudi Arabia." I really got a chuckle out of that, but as I said, it's tragicomic. It's also idiotic. It's stupid. It doesn't make sense. It defies reason. But it's what happens, and that's what's going on, isn't it? It's exactly what's happening. So the United States is supplying tanks to Saudi Arabia, super sophisticated F-14 fighters that you probably haven't even seen a picture or read very many specifications about yet, because they were developed in a super secret program that I was able to see a little bit of even before its completion. And our own Air Force is going to have to wait a couple, 3 years, because we're going to have to get busy to send all those over to Iran. I guess the people at Grumman can look forward to pretty good employment. I don't think there are going to be a lot of layoffs there. Of course, the automobile industry, well, that's hit pretty hard. I don't know why we can't go over and sell automobiles to Iran. Maybe they don't have any roads. Maybe they're too expensive. My son Mark said that it costs about $20,000 equivalent in American dollars for a middle or economy class Dodge over in Israel. I have no idea what we would want to charge Iran. Maybe if we could put gun turrets on those automobiles, on the yards and the lots out there, that Iran would be interested. Maybe the United States could look at its old armories and all of the old guns we got around in Cosmoline here and have a kind of a garage sale and invite Iran. Apparently we're willing to kind of roll over and lie on our back with our legs in the air like a dog, you know, with his tongue hanging out, and let Iran have whatever it wants over here. You know, we might as well sell them. I mean, somebody else is going to if we don't. The Shah of Iran is determined that he's going to make himself into a gigantic military power, resurrect dreams of empire, put the Persian Empire back into modern history as one of the great powers of the world. Well, he doesn't have a thing to fear. The United States is perfectly willing to cooperate. We have determined that we're going to sell him arms, helicopters, tanks, guns, ships, weapons of all kinds, super sophisticated ones, latest design, even before we're going to sell them to our own Army, Navy, Marine Corps, and Air Force, because you see, our Army and Navy and Marine Corps and Air Force doesn't have any money. We sent all our money to Iran to pay for oil so we could keep our economy going, so we could be strong. Do you understand what I'm saying? I don't think I understand what I'm saying. I'm losing myself here. Well, these past many programs, I've been talking about the Middle East and bringing you reports from over there, because I firmly expect sometime soon, in the spring, maybe even of 1975, we're going to see another gigantic military conflagration in the Middle East. Syria is armed and ready. Israel is with her back to the wall, in terrible trouble economically, and of course continually with all of the Arabs around her, with the policy that is of such unanimity among them of the total destruction and annihilation of Israel. Israel expects that maybe if it can't get some talks going, it is going to find itself involved in another war. Egypt is saying the same thing, even though Egyptian President Anwar Sadat says that he has not yet been, quote, compensated, end quote, for all the weapons that he lost in the last war. But even President Anwar Sadat said recently that the Middle East is a ticking bomb which could explode at any moment, either by accident or design. Cairo claims to be a little afraid that Syria, which is more militant, could drag Egypt into a new Arab-Israeli war before Cairo is really ready. Because Cairo is making whimpering sounds to the Soviet Union that they haven't been compensated. They'd like to have more aircraft, more missiles, and they, of course, would like to have more people to help train them, when they know that there are about 1,000 so-called instructors or advisors from the Soviet Union inside Syria right now, training the Syrians to use these new ground-to-air and surface-to-surface missiles, as well as anti-tank rockets that they've got, and a new consignment of MiG-23 supersonic jets, which are faster than even the F-14. 3.5 Mach. And those are in the Syrian hands right now. Western defense experts tell how Syria is so well equipped with modern Soviet weapons that she could easily be tempted to start a war, because now she has far more equipment than she had in the October War of 1973. So several thousand Soviet advisors are supposed to be there, not just 1,000. And what worries Egypt is the possibility that Syria, impatient with the lack of any foreseeable significant development toward regaining the Israeli-occupied Golan Heights, might revert to some military action. Sadat said, and I quote, "I am one of those who say the year 1975 is not only the year of war, but the next few months carry within them the danger of imminent explosion." You try to make heads or tails of what's happening in the Middle East, and all you can say is it looks like war is right around the corner there. And everybody's getting into the act. Here we swallow the idea that we're going around the world with our Henry Kissinger, trying to talk these nations into stepping back from a posture of hostilities, trying to work through the United Nations to get nations to absolve and resolve their difficulties at the conference table, trying to get arms limitations agreements and non-aggression pacts and treaties, trying to get nations to step down from their age-old, insane rationale of guns before butter, trying to help the third world countries ensure that they build up their nation, their raw materials, their resources, their agriculture, that they modernize their roads and their public services, that they find out how to clean up their water and get public education and public health programs. Oh, we want them all to enter the first world. We don't want them to be third world countries. We don't want them to be, quote, developing. We want them to be developed. Now, we know it's obscenely irrational for countries that need that development so desperately to spend their billions upon billions of dollars on military hardware, when they ought to be building hospitals and schools and roads, and they ought to be cleaning up their public water supply, and they ought to be revolutionizing and modernizing their agriculture, and they ought to be finding alternative sources of power and of energy, such as geothermal and nuclear even. But instead, we are just like any other gluttonous, greedy salesman hawking our wares in the bazaar, willing to sell super sophisticated weapons. to anybody. Presumably, if the Soviet Union would like to buy a few hundred, we'd send them some. It wouldn't really matter. It doesn't make sense. We know and we understand that the Arab countries of the Middle East and Iran may be almost immediately future enemies against which we may find ourselves locked in deadly combat. Yet you look at the announcements in your daily newspapers that we are selling billions upon billions of dollars of super sophisticated weaponry to the very nations that Mr. Kissinger said we may very soon be fighting. Isn't it incredible? And our own Army and Air Force and Navy are being told, well, you guys are going to have to wait a few months or a few years for your F-14s. We've got to send these to Iran. And as the conversation that Art Buchwald alleged might be taking place in the Pentagon went, what if the balloon goes up, meaning what if the whole thing bursts, and what if we're at war in the Middle East before we get our consignment? Pretty good question, isn't it? Pretty good question. You know, it's no wonder that Bible prophecy zeroes in on the Middle East. It's no wonder it has a lot to say about Persia, about the area to the east of Jerusalem. It's no wonder that Bible prophecy pictures the area surrounding Jerusalem as an armed camp. It's no wonder that Jesus said in verse 20 of the 21st chapter of Luke, when you shall see Jerusalem compassed with armies, then know that the desolation thereof is nigh. There's one little quirk, one little trick of fate here that is occurring that I could not have remotely foreseen. I've always understood that those Arab antagonists of Israel were supplied by the Soviet Union, and I knew that America was going along piecemeal with supplying of King Hussein's Jordanian army with American medium tanks and American machine guns and bazookas and helicopters and all of that. But I didn't really expect, I've got to say I've been taken by total surprise, I didn't really expect that the major arms supplier to the Middle Eastern countries and even to Iran, which though not Arab is Muslim in its religion, and therefore backs the Arabs religiously, would be the United States of America. I really could not have imagined that if we go to war in the Middle East at some future time, our boys, our young men, are going to be dying as they're blasted to bits by helicopters off American-built aircraft carriers with American-built rockets and being blasted out of the sky with American-built F-14 jets, even delivered before our own armed services can get any. Well, why don't you write to the plain truth and hear some more of this good news in there. We'll tell you exactly the way it is. Art Buchwald's column is going to come along in the plain truth. By the way, we'll have up to about 35 or 40 articles every single month, twice a month, jam-packed, powerful, straight-from-the-shoulder articles, just like the plain talk on this program. Plain Truth is free of charge. Also request a booklet on how to understand prophecy. We would like to know the call letters of the station to which you're listening, the name of this radio station, and then we'll get your Plain Truth in the mail as quickly as we can.
You have been listening to The World Tomorrow. If you would like more information, write to Ambassador College, Box 345, GPO Sydney, New South Wales. That's Ambassador College, Box 345, GPO Sydney, New South Wales.